All right, everybody, welcome to the fifth edition of the Driving Play Trade Deadline Podcasts. This version, we will be talking about the middling teams in the Eastern Conference. These are teams that are either fighting for a playoff spot or are just out on the outside looking in, and their decisions over these next few days will be a balance of trying to improve their team for a potential playoff run this year with making decisions that maximizes the value of their existing assets for future runs. Joined as always by Chase.
Bonjour.
And then Julian from the fantastic Toronto Maple Leafs blog, The Pension Plan Puppets.
Hello, because when you need opinions on middling teams, you want to come to the experts.
And now we will focus on another middling team from the Great White North, the Montreal Canadiens. This is a team that had pretty decently high expectations coming into the year, but unfortunately they've pretty much bottomed out, sort of a combination of injuries and bad luck for the players who have played. And now we have previously recorded about 30 minutes of content on the Canadiens, but unfortunately it wasn't recording, so we're just going to boil it down to these next 2 minutes. Basically, they need to sell off any UFA to B players, so Travis Moan, Andre Kostitsyn, because they have five critical RFAs headlined by Carey Price and PK Subban, and that's going to cost, obviously, a lot of money. The key with them is really what do they do about the elephants in the room, Scott Gomez and Tomas Kerbelay, because those are two players who are signed for a lot of money that just are not living up to their contract, and being able to clear one of those guys out would do a whole lot to allow them to give these players their raises and then also go out in the UFA market this summer and improve the team. So you guys have any thoughts to add there, or do you want to move on to the next team?
Nope, that's basically it. Let's get to the team that matters.
The Toronto Maple Leafs, and I will turn the floor over to Julian, and he can get started right now.
So I don't think it's any secret that there are a lot of Maple Leaf fans in the world, so whenever anyone's coming up with rumors, it makes sense to include them in some way. So the Leafs are rumored to be in on, you know, Nash, Dustin Brown for those 4 hours he was available before Lombardi put the kibosh on it, you know, James Van Riemsdyk, basically any big name. If they're American and a forward, even better. So the Leafs, I don't feel that they have, you know, the high-end prospect pool that lets them kind of compete with some of the offers that are on the table, for example, for Nash from the Rangers. But what I fear is that a GM is going to try to get Burke to swap quantity and picks, similar to the Zidlicky trade. And I just don't know that in long term it's going to be something that helps the team, because I think anyone that's watched the Leafs knows that they don't really need a Rick Nash. They need more of a big defenseman or a goalie that can stop the puck and not put it into his own net. So, I mean, ideally, in the next couple of days, they don't do anything unless it addresses those two. And they haven't really been rumored to do anything that seems to be up Burke's alley. But long term, they're going to have to find a solution in net, whether that's Reimer, you know, after a summer of getting back to 100%, or if that's a goalie off the UFA market or a trade. I think, you know, they've been linked to Harding and Limbach out of Nashville as guys that might be available. And then I guess really the big decision for them is going to be Mikhail Grabowski. I think Blackhawks apparently are interested in him. There's an offer on the table for a second round pick and a prospect. And his agent's apparently been on the saying he wants around, you know, close to Phil Kessel money. So that might be their big decision. You know, if something comes down the pipe that they want to move him for, do that, or, you know, try to push on for the playoffs and keep them and risk losing them.
The interesting thing about the Leafs is all these UFA contracts that are going to come up in 2 seasons. They're pretty set on the back end as far as having guys locked in. And obviously Gunnarsson, Gardner are still RFAs, so they're good there. But up front, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens because, I mean, you guys got Lupul, Lombardi, MacArthur, Armstrong, and then Grabo after this year running out, and then Kessel the year after those guys. So, I mean, the rubber's really going to meet the road here as far as trying to find some sort of forward up front, like you alluded to, that they can have for a few years down the road.
Yeah, like I think the big reason they probably didn't, I don't think they went after Carter too hard, was Burke doesn't want to commit, you know, those 10 years to the guys, or 11 years, whatever.
Yeah, right.
But the good thing is some of the way some of these contracts are staggered is, you know, guys like Connolly, Lombardi, Armstrong, they might be guys they have to make decision on this summer in terms of either seeing if there's a way to get rid of them or putting them down in the Marlies. But at the rate, like when they expire, those are guys that hopefully, you know, a guy like Fratton, who's an RFA this summer, he can step in and fill in one of their roles. Kadri can step up. Colburn will come in. So they'll be up front. They'll get some more kind of cheap contracts in. But yeah, they might, going forward, they've got Kessel signed for 2 more years. He's the only one. And Mike Brown. So there's, that might be one reason he wants to look at Nash, is Nash is a guy he's willing to commit to long term.
And one thing that is just really interesting to me is what are they going to do to be able to compete next year? Because so much, you know, because they have so much committed for next year. I mean, they have, you know, they have 13 million in space, but, you know, they've got 9 forwards signed and their entire blue line is set except for giving a raise to Cody Franzen and, you know, whatever they would have to do with a goaltender. So really realistically, unless they decide to eat, say Komisarek's contract or Matthew Lombardi's contract or even Colby Armstrong's contract, unless they're able to make some move like that, that frees up cap space, how much different is their forward group going to be next year? And I guess the second question is, because this is all operating under the assumption that they're not going to be able to re-sign Grabowski. So it seems to me that, you know, if they decide to focus on improving their goaltending and it comes at the expense of a high-priced replacement for Grabowski, how much better will the team be next year, really?
Yeah, they're in a tough spot with a guy like Komisarek, because he has a no-trade and no-move clause. But you're right, like they have to have changes. Right now they're set up to essentially ice, you know, a jarringly similar team to one that, you know, before the season started, people already knew their ceiling was a bubble team. One of the things we mentioned in the apocryphal Habs segment was that this summer's CBA negotiations could have a big impact on what the Leafs can do. The NBA last summer worked out an amnesty period. I don't really know the details because basketball sucks and I don't pay attention to it, but I caught that part. But, you know, Komisarek, a guy like Armstrong especially, those are two guys that you could see in an amnesty getting bought out. Komisarek might get bought out legitimately anyway, just to open a spot for a real defenseman. And guys like Lombardi and Connolly, they're still useful players. They might not be the Leafs might be able to fit a better option in there. So those might be something they'd give away. I mean, the Leafs have a track. Burke has put Jeff Finger in the Marlies for the last 2 seasons. So he's not afraid to do it. I guess the counter to that is that he didn't sign Finger. He signed these other guys. But because, you know, Lombardi, Armstrong, Connolly don't have no movement or no trade clauses, the Leafs do have some flexibility if they're willing to do what it takes. I don't think that having those guys on the roster is going to be what keeps the Leafs from re-signing Grabowski. or from, you know, just switching up what they have, right? Because it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm not outside of the player, you know, like Colborne and Kadri, who are pretty highly regarded. I'm not too familiar with the depth of the prospects, but another option to make, because I wonder if moving a Connolly or a Lombardi, you know, I wonder how possible that would be without eating another bad contract. So I wonder if they'd be able to do something like send Connolly and, you know, a prospect just for like a middle round draft pick or something like that, and use a prospect as a sweetener to not have to take on another contract.
Yeah, like I mentioned before, the Leafs kind of have that prospect pool where they've got a lot of guys that probably top out at best, kind of middle to lower of the depth chart. So a guy like Matt Fratton that played a while at the beginning of the year on the team, you know, he's probably right now a good third liner that can, you know, play some second line minutes if you're trying to switch things up. Guys like Colburn and Kadri, they'll probably still need a year or two of playing that similar role before their ceiling's probably second line. But they do have some guys that it might, you know, they might have players and teams interested in something like that. More likely is the Leafs taking back a bad salary that they're willing to, that they think addresses a need, or that they think they can bury in the minors. So maybe send out, you know, an Armstrong, which is bad money up front, for a defenseman that makes similar money that can play, you know, whatever second pairing minutes or something for the Leafs. Mm. You know, they might not be worth $3-4 million, but they can fill a need the Leafs have.
At least there's a plus for the Leafs, though, that all of these players expire next summer. So it's not like, you know, these are terrible albatrosses and that they're signed and that Colby Armstrong is signed for another 3 years after this year or something like that. So that is a plus that they will be able to retool. It'll be easier to retool because it's a lot easier for a GM to take on a bad contract if that bad contract is done in a pretty short period of time.
Yeah, so that's kind of one of the reasons I'm leery of Burke going into any long-term deals, is because, like you said, he's got it so that, you know, next year he could have a mix kind of these on forward of guys that he wants long-term and some guys that he's just waiting to play out the string. But within one more season, you know, he's got kind of a blank slate again. You know, whether he's around to take advantage of it is another question. if they don't make the playoffs this year and he's kind of almost a dead man walking along with his coach.
All right, so now on to the ragtag of UFA players, the Florida Panthers.
Oh, yeah, the odds and sods.
Yep, Dale Talon's mission to get to the salary floor.
Yeah, Frank and team. And they traded for, I was out around lunch, but they traded for Wolski today?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, they did.
That's why, I mean, that's obviously New York clearing up space, but yeah, they gave up some third round pick and some random prospects that doesn't really matter.
I think that kind of in itself tells you all you need to know. They're pretty much what you see is what you're going to get. Maybe some small additions here or there, but I think they're pretty much where they're going to be. If they do win the Southeast and make the playoffs, I think this is pretty much the team you're going to get. They're not going to be a team that spends up to the cap, obviously. They're a little below it, but I mean, about $10 million. But as far as moving forward, they've got some contracts coming off the books. Obviously, Samuelsson and Sturm for that terrible, terrible David Booth trade. But they're going to have some players, Versteeg and then Volsky, who are RFAs. I don't know if Volsky will warrant much of a raise, but Versteeg, the way he's played this year, will probably get a little more. So that's, with those guys that are coming off the books, that's definitely going to be where some of that money goes. But just with all these contracts Talon signed in the offseason, I think they're going to be pretty restricted as far as what they can do. going forward, obviously, because they're not going to spend to the cap. And these are just the core group of guys that they're going to be running it with for the next few seasons. What do you guys think?
Yeah, like if they were spending the cap, they're not in that bad of shape because they have a decent amount of money. But as you said, they're obviously not going to do that. Yeah, Talon, this is like the Franken team. Talon signed a bunch of guys, I guess, because someone told him he had money to spend, and if he didn't, it would disappear. But he has some pretty awful long-term deals, like Bergenhain and Kopetsky, and, you know, Versteeg's going to, like you said, get a raise. Wolski might have to give some money back because he's been awful. But the one that is the two that are handcuffing him are, you know, the Brian Campbell one and Ed Jovanovski. Right there is about over $11 million, 11 and a quarter. And that's a lot of money he could have used to bring in, you know, some better players. It hasn't gone entirely poorly just because the Southeast has been so awful. I think they've benefited from Washington and Tampa really underachieving relative to last year. So they're in the hunt for either the division title or missing the playoffs.
He at least seems to understand how to handle a goalie situation, so I guess we can compliment him for that.
Well, and they've got, I mean, Markstrom is probably is one of their best prospects. I mean, he's one of the best goalie prospects in the entire league, so my guess is he'll step in next year, and it'll be Theodore and Markstrom, you know, because they're not going to re-sign Scott Clementson. But honestly, like, yes, Brian Campbell is overpaid, but he's at least a quality defenseman. I think he certainly gets a bad rap. At least he did in Chicago when he played here. But he's a good player. I mean, the Hawks certainly miss him, that's for sure. But I don't know, with Florida, like, next year, as you mentioned, there's almost no chance that they are in this position next year, even if they improve, just because it's highly unlikely that we're going to see the type of seasons that we did next year from Washington and Tampa. And if either of those two teams were playing like people expected them to play, Florida would be irrelevant. But I mean, with Florida, I don't know, they just have so many growth. Like, they have, you mentioned Bergenhain and Kopecky, but Scotty Upshaw and Thomas Fleischmann are also signed for 3 more years after this year. Those last two are signed for a combined $8 million.
Upshaw might be one of the only ones I don't hate on that team, because I think his contract's probably about fair value for what he gives you.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a pretty good possession player, and for $3.5 million for that long, I like that deal. But yeah, I mean, other than him, just pretty much every deal he signed. I mean, maybe Bergenhain, I kind of like that too. But I mean, just between Kopetsky, Fleischmann, and Jovo Kopp, they're just going to be screwed.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, I don't think Bergenhain and Kopetsky are the worst contracts, or Upshaw. It's just one of those where when you spend that much money on borderline second, third line players, it adds up. Like, you're overpaying, you know, $1.5 million per player, let's say, and that adds up, and that takes away from guys you can spend top-end money. Like, if you had homegrown players, like, you could have, instead of Fleischmann, who's pretty good at 4.5, let's say, you could have true higher-end player in there. Of course, the issue is, how do you get them out to Florida?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, they're going to have to, I mean, the only way that they could ever acquire an elite player is if they draft them or if they overpay in some trade. But, you know, it's never smart for a team like that to overpay for an elite player, because there's so many other pieces that they have to fill up. But I mean, they do have a really nice prospect base. I mean, we talked about Markstrom coming up, but, and, you know, obviously Goodbranson's a top end player too. But Huberto is just absolutely crushing the OHL this year, and, you know, he certainly was good enough to make the team.
Yeah, and they have Hockey Thibault, right? Grimaldi.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, maybe those are guys that they can get in next year, the year after. I think we were talking earlier a bit on the value of entry-level contracts. And one thing Florida did well by accident with Goodbranson was they left him an extra year in junior just because they couldn't settle a deal. But Kulikov's deal is over this year. And that's one that would have been great to have as an entry level starting, let's say, this season and ending at the same time as Gudbranson's in 2 years. So, you know, maybe Huberdeau and Grimaldi are guys that help add offense and take the sting out of overpaying some of these second and third line tweeners.
You know, because if Huberdeau comes in and if he can be a legitimate top line center, then that allows these guys to slot back some and play in a role that they're, you know, better suited actually playing in. You know, because a lot of these guys are slotted up just because they don't really have any true, I mean, Stephen Weiss is probably their best forward, or is definitely their best forward, and I mean, he's a nice player, but a lot of these guys are playing over their head. And
yeah, that brings me to what I was going to say next about Weiss. He's done after next season, so I mean, all these guys locked into these long-term deals is going to, and especially with Versteeg and Kulikov and some of the other RFAs getting raises, what they're going to be able to do with him is going to be interesting. Maybe with some of these young guys coming up, they just end up letting him go.
Yeah.
Speaking of awful franchises, I heard that someone for the Jets scored in a shootout today, and Jets fans threw hats on because I guess it was their third goal of the game. And I just saw someone go, oh, yeah, but Atlanta had the stupid hockey fans that don't know anything.
On to the Winnipeg Jets, because they're the next team on our list. They're in a pretty interesting spot, too, I feel like, just because, I mean, they're seems like they're pretty well set on defense for, you know, at least for next year. You know, Bogosian and Stewart and Enstrom and Bufflin and Hainsey. Oduya is a UFA at the end of the year, and it'll be interesting to see if they, because obviously has value for them this year if they're going to be contending for a playoff spot, which they obviously are. And, you know, even if they're not true contenders, getting to the playoffs this year would just be absolutely huge for the fan base and for the franchise. So there's some non-hockey, you know, non-hockey ramifications there, though.
Yeah, Winnipeg's got, like, they've actually got, like you said, a lot of guys coming off the books that they can get rid of to open up a lot of space, so it'll be interesting what they do. They've obviously benefited from having a division that no one wants to win, but they've had a guy like Blake Wheeler's really had a breakout year, and they've still got him for another year at a pretty good $2.5 million.
I think it'll be interesting to see with them, really, is do they become a cap team? Because, I mean, they've sold out, you know, season tickets, obviously, for the next 2 years. And the fan base is, you know, obviously willing to support a team. And, you know, there's so obviously, there is a great honeymoon effect there. But I just wonder, you know, because playing in Winnipeg is not necessarily attractive for free agents, and teams like that generally have to overpay to get a UFA player in there, are they going to be a cap team? It is really what I think, because they have a nice enough foundation to where they added some pieces in free agency where they could be not necessarily one of the league elites, but at least a team that could realistically contend to make the playoffs year in and year out. So I think that'll be interesting to see.
Enstrom's definitely going to get a raise after next season, and Kane's going to get a raise after this year. So, I mean, they're going to have to start. Pavelic's definitely going to get a raise after this year. So, I mean, they've got guys who are going to start to go up in the next few seasons. So, if they want to keep this good core together, I think they're going to have to start spending at least a little bit more just to kind of supplement some of these good young guys who are coming off their first or second contracts.
And they've got, so next season they got to spend a bit of dough on those RFAs, but then they have, you know, a guy like Hainsey. His $4.5 million comes off the books. Mm-hmm. You can replace him a lot cheaper. One of my favorites, Antropov, he comes off the books. There's another $4 million. Mm-hmm. But I think, so Winnipeg basically has no excuse not to spend to the absolute cap. As you mentioned, they sell out every game, and the fans there have gone to all the games, and you know, when they were in Atlanta, you know, the team was a bit of a disaster and fans weren't going, and that's a big reason why they moved. But, you know, now that that they have that steady income. Basically, any Jets merchandise gets scooped up. They don't have a reason not to spend to the cap. So they have 12 players signed for $34 million. I think I saw a report by LeBrun a couple weeks ago, Pierre LeBrun, saying that the cap might go up to as much as $69 million. So they'll have, you know, that could be over like $30 million for upgrades and guys coming off RFA deals. So, you know, that'll be a big test for Cheval Dayoff to, you know, show what he's got. They've definitely taken advantage of a really weak Southeast this year. I think Gabe over at Arctic Ice was saying this might be the worst division in hockey history, just based on the goals, four goals against differential. But to their credit, I mean, you can just beat the teams put in front of you, and they've done that. It, you know, it'd be easier to deal with if their fans weren't so obnoxious and just awful to Atlanta fans, considering the situation they were in. But when your team's owned by one of the richest people in Canada, you really should be spending to the cap every year. So they're kind of in a precarious spot, because I don't know that anything that they can move teams will want, or that they'll want to move.
Yeah.
Wellwood might be someone that they could get something for, but I think he's been in their best center, so they're not going to swap him. Another UFA, as you said, was Oduya, but I always got the sense that Oduya was kind of a long-term guy for them, if only to say, you know, we got something for Kovalchuk.
All right, so now on to the Ottawa Senators with the defenseman who has a chance to be the greatest ever, according to Eugene Melnyk, Erik Karlsson. I mean, it seems like they're pretty much at this point locked into a spot. I mean, they've got 6 points on the eighth place team, although, you know, they've played more than Florida. But I mean, it looks like they're going to be in the playoffs. And I know Brian Murray has come out and said that they're not going to do anything either way. They're not going to take on any salary or make any additions, and they're not going to. Obviously, they're not going to sell. They're just going to run it as is and see what happens. And that seems like a pretty good strategy, because he probably understands. I mean, they're basically free rolling, because a lot of people expected them to be among the worst teams in the league this year. So, I don't know. It's pretty interesting with them, because they do have a pretty, I mean, in the back, they're stacked, because Karlsson is obviously excellent, and Jared Cohen's a really nice player. And they've got some good prospects that will fill. The thing with them is they have a handful of RFA to be forwards who don't necessarily project to be, you know, top six players certainly, or even top nine players. But I think it'll be interesting to see how they handle that, because if they sign all these guys, it'll be a log jam up front. Wouldn't really make much sense financially to add any big pieces next year. But it's another team that I don't know if they're ever become a cap team, because they probably need to spend to the cap to really make these improvements, because outside of the blue line, they don't have that much in terms of young guys that could step in and be good, you know, over the next 5 years.
Yeah, like you said, they're playing with house money, right? Like this season, I think Paul McLean probably deserves a lot of credit for what he's done with the team, just because, like you said, everyone thought they were going to be garbage. I know a lot of people thought the funny thing was going to be Craig Anderson would probably have a good enough year to keep them out of the bottom five. But I definitely didn't think they'd be as entrenched in the playoffs as they are at this point. And I guess Anderson cut his hand open a couple nights ago. So I think Ryan Murray's probably in a spot where he's not going to do anything. They are a team that should be spending to the cap, like you said. You know, they're a Canadian market owned by a passionate billionaire owner who's not afraid to share his opinions on players heading into contract negotiations, like he could be the best defenseman ever. I'm sure Brian Murray appreciated that. I think he's famously this year said that, complained about Habs and Leaf fans taking over his arena. I think he wants to institute some kind of corporal punishment for fans that sell their tickets to Leafs and Habs fans.
Oh my god.
Yeah, but yeah, they're a team that should spend the cap, and they do have, you know, Karlsson is looking like at worst he's going to be top 10 offensive defenseman for the the foreseeable future. Cowan's kind of in that awkward phase where he needs to learn how to adapt to being much slower than the rest of the players on the ice. But they've got, you know, Kubas coming off the cap. That's 3.7. And their RFAs, like you said, they're guys that, if they play it right, they can have kind of the third and fourth line set and have some space to bring in someone to help, you know, offset next year. Milan Mihalik's probably not going to do as well as this year. But someone that can help Spezza kind of carry the load up forward.
As far as the best defense and everything goes, I wonder what kind of zone start Bobby Orr got.
Yeah, but so in terms of the deadline, I expect these guys to be pretty quiet. This summer, it'll probably be trying to flesh things out. The Filatov gamble didn't quite work, so they need, you know, Alfredson's slowing down somewhat finally. So they'll need someone to kind of carry the load as, you know, a secondary consistent offensive option besides Spezza, because I don't, as good as McCulloch's season's been, you know, I'm not sure that he'll repeat that next year.
Yeah, I think 2 years is going to be, in 2 years, it's going to be really interesting to see what they do. Just because, I mean, they have a lot of money coming off this year. Obviously, they have those RFAs that they need to sign, but none of them should get substantial raises. But after that, they're going to have Turris coming up. Neal is going to be running out. Alfredson, obviously. Gonchar. So they're going to, in a few years, it's going to be interesting to see where they go with all of this. Because they're, I mean, they're kind of like the Leafs in that sense, where, I mean, they're going to have a pretty clean slate with their standard core guys still there, but...
Yeah, they've got, so, you know, between this summer and next summer, we'll get a good sense probably of which guys are going to be running with long-term. Like you said, because they'll have, like, they're definitely going to have Spezza, they'll definitely have Carlson and Anderson, but, and Jared Cowan and Chris Phillips, but beyond that, they've got, you know, a ton of space and a ton of options. So Brian Murray will have his work cut out for him.
One thing that I think will be pretty interesting, and I'm going to butcher the shit out of his name, but what they do with Mika Zibanejad, I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation or not. You know, he's there.
Oh, yeah.
He was drafted sixth overall this year, and he's playing in...
Uh-huh.
I mean, he played 9 games earlier on in the season, and he was sent down. I mean, well, not sent down, but sent back to Sweden. So I think that'll be interesting to see if they keep him over there next year or if they bring him over, you know, if they keep him in Sweden or bring him to the NHL or bring him to Binghamton and then see what they do there. Because that's, I mean, if he projects to be a pretty good player, they could obviously have use for him because he'd be a cheap alternative. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, is he really going to be that much better next year than someone that they can sign in the free agent market and then, you know, they don't have to burn any of his entry-level contracts?
Yeah, like that's a tough thing for these guys, like Burke and Murray, making deals is anything you do this summer in terms of bringing in help for whatever position. You know, UFA guys are looking for, obviously, some security and long-term deals, 3 to 5 years. And the thing I always think with Burke is when you're signing a guy to a deal, you got to think of where he's going to be for the life of the deal. Sure, a guy like Grabowski, you've got a way that he's probably going to be your second, your best center next year, maybe the year after. But if ideally he's going to be your second, maybe your third best center in years 3, 4, and 5 of the deal. And how much do you really want to be paying your third best center? Right. So it's a tough balancing act. And any UFAs you bring in, obviously, you're going to want, like, there's a sense that, or it's not a sense, it's a reality. You have to overpay them, and you've probably got to get them a little bit longer term, unless you do something similar to what the Leafs did with Connolly. And say, you know what, we'll give you more money if you take a shorter deal, just because we prefer having the flexibility of the short contracts.
Yeah, and looking at some of the players who will be free agents this year, it'll be really interesting to see, you know, who teams like Ottawa, Winnipeg, teams in that similar situation that have a lot of money to spend and you could realistically assume them to be a cap team. It'll be interesting to see the guys that end up getting these contracts. Like, it'll be interesting to see what happens with a guy like, I mean, I think Parise will stay in New Jersey, but what will happen to a guy like Alexander Semin, or, you know, somebody like that who really, for all his faults, looks to be one of the best forwards, you know, because, you know, Hemsky's now off the market, and, you know, Yager's going to probably re-sign in Philadelphia, and Grabowski. I mean, that'd be pretty slick for the Senators to sign Grabowski.
You know what? I really like Grabowski, and I think as much as he hates Montreal, he understands that deep down he has to hate Ottawa. So I don't think he would do that to Leafs fans. I'd hate to have to burn my Grabowski jersey if he signed in Ottawa. Well, I think that would give them, you know, you running Spezza and Grabowski down the middle, that's a pretty good pairing.
Yep. Yeah, because really, and this is obviously the starkest, I mean, no shit, it's going to be the starkest contract, is that the teams that are already elite, the pieces that they have to add in the summer or at the deadline are guys that are a lot easier to get to sign to these cheap contracts and these team-friendly deals. That's really, I mean, not reinventing the wheel with this analysis, but it just makes it so much easier to, you know, because you're not going to have to give guys like Paul Gostad a no-trade clause, or, you know, give guys like, you know, Sammy Paulson or Jay McClement, guys who can play the toughs and kill penalties and drive play, you're not going to have to give them the same type of money and term and any no-trade or no-movement clauses to these higher-profile free agents.
Yeah.
On to the worst franchise in the history of professional sports, the New Jersey Devils. They should obviously have been in our buyer's edition of the Eastern Conference, because they've obviously made some small moves, like getting Ponikarovsky and now Marek Zulinski. The thing with them, I think they're going to be pretty set as far as what you see here. I don't think they're going to be moving any huge pieces to bring back anything substantial. I think this is pretty much what you're going to get as far as the playoffs go. And they've started to address their need up front. They got their blue liner. I think the real question with them is what they're going to do going forward, because after the season, Parise is a UFA, Marty Brodeur's reflexes are shot, so he's probably going to retire, so I hope. And they're going to need to do something in goal, and possibly they could have to replace Parise. So what do you guys think?
Well, they do have the benefit of some really nice production from guys who are under team control for a while. Adam Henrique has had a fantastic season. And obviously Adam Larson's a very good player, and I have no idea how to pronounce his name. I'm bad with names, Matt Taormina. But I guess the point is they have somewhat of a buffer in terms of guys who are, again, still under team control for at least 3, 4, 5 years, you know, after their post-ELC deal. And they do have a decent amount of money expiring. Ponikarovsky makes $1.5 million. He's probably not going to be back. Bryce Salvador, UFA to be, probably not going to be back, especially with Larson. And their other, you know, RFA defensemen. So that's another $2.9 million right there. So that's $4.4 million. Really, the biggest thing with them is there's been lots of speculation that their budget is basically expressly determined by the NHL. So it'll be interesting to see what, if any, effect that has on any negotiations with Parise. Because if the NHL tells them, look, you can only spend up to this amount of money, that might preclude them from being able to re-sign Parise unless they are able to move, you know, one of their forwards, you know, like a Zubris or a Clarkson, who makes a decent amount of money and they'd probably be able to find a buyer for one of those guys, because they're really at a crossroads almost. Because, like, let's just say they don't sign Parise. A lot of these players, other than Henrique, And obviously Kovalchuk, you know, they don't really have very many forwards that they can count on to be, you know, above average to elite NHL players once, you know, once next season is over. I mean, they're pretty much set on defense with Tolinder and Larson and Volchenkov long term. So I think it'll be a pretty interesting scenario.
Yeah, like this is, so it seems like Lou's kind of gearing up for this. He might be gearing up for one last run with Brodeur. He's kind of, I guess, having a flashback second half. But I don't know that the Devils have anything in the pipeline in net. And this whole bankruptcy hanging over their head is, like you said, will they be allowed to re-sign Perry Zay? Like, how much is the league involved, and why don't they just sell the team to the Leafs and let them pick the best players and then fold them? Like, I think this is something the three of us can get behind.
Yes.
Exactly.
I mean,
so, like, I just, they're kind of in that weird mishmash where you don't know what the plan is going forward. Because if they lose Perizet, and I know that's one of the ones that Leaf fans are kind of dying that they'll sign, because he fits in the kind of the bucket that everyone associates with the Leafs, which is a forward and American.
Julian, from a Canadian media standpoint, I'm sure you, I don't know if this has anything to, that has anything to do with it, but what are you hearing about Brodeur? Do you think he's done at the end of this year?
I think there's been.
Do they say much about him up there?
No, like there's always a tendency to. I think, and I've obviously been guilty, is that whenever he's had kind of a rough stretch lately, you know, a lot of people jump in the fray ready to say he's done. Like, Brodeur's getting towards the end of the line. But it's tough, because a lot of the big names in Canada, like Damien Cox, defends him to the death, even, you know, when he was falling apart at the Olympics, because Cox wrote his biography. So he's got a backer there for life. But Brodeur's kind of in that stage where Patrick Waugh was at towards the end, where he just doesn't really get that criticized.
That's fair. I'm sure there's a lot of sister-in-law talk in that biography. At least if it was a good one.